Welcome to the Decent Crypto Podcast. Today is October 26th, and we have the Tron episode. Matt, this is a long time coming. How you doing?
It sure is. I mean, I'm so excited to cover something that actually targets scaling Ethereum.
I looked back. We've actually never talked about this topic. Scaling Ethereum, it just doesn't come up, you know, in normal crypto chatter or in crypto podcasts, things like this. Nobody talks about scaling Ethereum. What are we doing?
Yeah, I mean, it's wild because when you think about scaling Ethereum and the huge number of human hours and dollars that have been spent to scale Ethereum, like, it's kind of unbelievable. Like, you would think that like Ethereum was just like a fundamental law of physics and we have to work around it, right?
Has anybody like every thought time about making the blocks bigger?
It is interesting that with Bitcoin, we were thinking about making the blocks bigger, but with most of these chains, we're talking about just making them more frequent, aren't we? I guess to a degree, Litecoin was the result of making it more frequent, as opposed to making the blocks. They might have made them bigger. Nothing new under the sun. And that brings us to basically the main character of our Tron story, Justin Sun.
The main character maybe hit of crypto, you know, so far, definitely one of the top like 5 or 10.
I mean, who's been the part of more intrigue than Justin Sun? I mean, it's pretty wild. Like he's just consistently there. And
he literally is always there.
So let's jump in. Okay. Why does this exist? Why does Tron exist? So basically, Tron exists as stated in the white paper, as sort of like an evolution to Bitcoin and Ethereum. But as transaction volumes have grown, it's become clear that they can't scale for mass adoption. Nothing new under the sun. There are a few kind of innovations that I find pretty interesting when it comes to Tron. We'll dive into them in a little bit. But I think it's actually worth bringing up, why does the Tron white paper exist? Because I learned something doing the research for this. The Tron white paper dropped in August 2017. Yeah. And shortly thereafter, China actually banned ICOs, right? The Tron ICO dropped in August 2017. So the white paper shortly before that. And it was literally days before China banned ICOs. And so the rumor is that Justin Sun knew that the ban was coming and decided to just send it as quickly as possible and launch the ICO. So he managed to raise about $70 million, which is kind of small by today's funding standards, which is kind of interesting. Although that would soon grow, you know, much, much larger in dollar value. He raised about $70 million to build this network, right? So they launched pretty quickly. They actually followed through. This was kind of made easier by, allegedly, it's like a fork of the Ethereum, I think it's called Ethereum J, the Java code base for Ethereum, or the Java implementation of Ethereum. It's not copy pasta, but it's basically all the same components rewritten by a team of developers out of China. In CS classes, a lot of times, in the early days, it was really easy to cheat, right? You would literally copy your friend's homework file and submit it as your own, right? Byte for byte, it would be exactly the same. And this is akin to how copy paste of Uniswap work today. So you have Uniswap, you have SushiSwap, and it's become tradition in these contracts that you literally just copy paste them. And that includes typos. So there are notable typos in, I think it's either Uniswap or Aave contracts, where if you don't include the typos, nobody knows whether or not they can trust the contracts because they don't know if it's literally byte for byte the same. Pretty fascinating. this was not exactly a copy paste like that. There was a little more effort put in. So this is like V2 of cheating on your CS homework, where you change variable names, right? You move around some things. Maybe you swap a line of logic for another line if it can happen. You add a comment here or there. That's kind of what we're working with when we talk about the Tron code base. It has a few adjustments. You want to talk about Justin Sun's history first before we jump into the protocol?
Yeah, sure, let's do it. Do you know why he is HE Justin Sun?
Oh, His Excellency.
Sun. So he was he used to be a diplomatic, what is the actual term? I don't know what
ambassador?
The actual term is. Yeah. I think he was an ambassador, like a diplomat or an ambassador to the nation of Granada. I think he just like bought his way in or something like that. And then they revoked it earlier this year.
Oh, interesting. He
calls himself His Excellency. Yeah, so I guess like he basically, his background is like he was, his claim to fame was like he went to the Jack Ma school in China, got a scholarship from there, something like that, or like was an award winner there. He was like doing some startup stuff. He got rich in crypto in like 2013. I guess like stayed in the space, and then launched Tron in 2017. Tron has been around. He's been around, always just in the news, always being accused of doing extremely shady stuff, always just kind of being one of the main characters. In 2020, I want to say, either he himself or the Tron network as a whole bought BitTorrent. BitTorrent, the
BitTorrent Inc. So the company that.
Interesting. Yeah, go ahead.
It was the company that built the protocol. So it's BitTorrent Inc. He bought them, became CEO for a little while. And then later, BitTorrent launched their own token, BTT. Unclear why that exists. Maybe that's our next deep dive.
I think they launched BitTorrent, like BTT, while he was the CEO. And a bunch of like the original BitTorrent team left after he took over. We're kind of just piecing all this together. He, after the ICO ban that you mentioned, I think he left China, right? He was just kind of living in various places, lived in Hong Kong for a while, lived in SF for a while. Let us see. What is he doing now? I have no idea. Where is he at, Matt?
Well, I mean, earlier this year, he stepped down from his position as he was, I want to say, Granada's like representative in the World Trade Organization. So he bought citizenship to Granada a while ago through like investment. And I think he's still like a citizen of Granada, but he stepped down from his role as representative to the World Trade Organization. And so now he's, who knows, right? We can't wait to find out. Did you know he worked at Ripple?
Wow, I had no idea.
Yeah, way back in the day, like 2014. I mean, I don't know what he did between then and launching Tron, but that brings us to the Tron network itself.
Well, hold on, let me tell this one story from this Verge article that's just amazing. After he bought BitTorrent, apparently he flew the BitTorrent C-suite into this hotel in Beijing. And he says, Sun took the head of the table and read his typed speech calling himself Chairman Mao, telling the C-suite executives that they were his generals and that together they would massacre their competition. People were feeling uncomfortable and incredulous at the euphemisms and metaphors a person who was present said. When some finished, BitTorrent's CEO made a key observation. Weren't all of Mao's generals killed? To which Sun supposedly confirmed, yes, yes. Then there's just this big blurb that says, fake the KYC, he screamed at one meeting. Fake it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So, we forgot the part where he bought an exchange.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. He still runs, what is it? Which one is it? Huobi?
It's Poloniex.
Oh, Poloniex.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, Endless Entertainment, you know, as long as we're on the Justin Sun part of this episode, 2021, yeah. When the market had its little mini crash, in like spring 2021, wasn't there the rumor that, that it was because someone fucked Justin Sun's wife? And so Justin Sun was tanking the market for revenge.
No, the opposite. No, the opposite. Apparently, the massive, gigantic giga whale was. Okay. So apparently, Justin Sun had a big, long position open. And then he went and fucked this giga whale's wife. And this guy was insistent on selling. And convincing all of his network to keep selling until Justin was liquidated from all of his positions. And that's why the market was down.
this is the reason we stick around, right? Like, it's just so entertaining.
One year when, Warren Buffett does the annual, bid to have lunch with him. One of the years, Justin won it. He bid and he won the lunch, and then Warren Buffett canceled it. He just didn't show. That is the best part. Like, who declined something that I think is going to charity? <He's just> like, that's pretty amazing. Yeah. What a guy.
I have one more Justin Sun story. So when Tornado Cash got banned mid 2022, or when it got OFAC sanctioned, in the wake of that, there were all these like reconsiderations by, you know, companies operating front end. So like Uniswap Labs or like Aave Labs or whoever like operates like the front end to these websites. They all started to worry that like they needed to start not allowing sanctioned addresses to interact with the contracts through their front end. And Justin Sun posted like a screenshot, like, yo guys, what the fuck? Like I have an open position on Aave. we were all just like, you use the Aave front end like the rest of us? Like what the fuck? Yeah, quite a character, lots of shenanigans. Anyway, back to Tron. So Tron does its ICO in August 2017, launches its testnet that year, launches mainnet the next year in 2018, a very auspicious time. And they go pretty hard on BD. They have like a bunch of partnerships. They got, I think, early Binance support for USDT. The network overall has been quite successful. It's currently at number 11 in market cap on CoinGecko. So I guess just to like dive in a little bit, what sets this thing apart from Ethereum? So the first thing is that it's delegated proof of stake, right? So this is like any Cosmos chain, right? Where you have like a capped number of stakers or validators, and you have like retail users delegating to each of them. So in Tron's case, this is 27 validators, right? Interestingly, so with Binance Smart Chain, it's 21 validators. And whoever has the most BNB like staked they get to become part of the active set. I think it's every 24 hours for BSC. So theoretically, if you have 21 million, or if you have enough BNB to become like the one of the top 21 stakers in the network, you can become a block producer on Binance Smart Chain. With Tron, it works a little bit differently. So there's a vote every 6 hours on who the active set is going to be. And in order to cast your vote, you do something called freezing Tron. And so anybody can vote, and their vote is proportional to how much Tron they freeze. And whoever gets the most votes, the top 27, they are the validators for the next 6 hours.
Hmm. I see.
Interesting, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, it's slightly different in that, like, with BSC, like, you need to kind of own the BNB and continue to own it, right? Whereas with Tron, there's this, you know, potential security issue where if you had enough friends that had enough TRX, right, you could convince them to vote for you, even if you're not staking very much, and you can still become part of the active set, which is, like, potentially an issue, right?
Why is that the case? Like, why do they do this voting thing every six hours?
I mean, it was early days, right? Like, delegated proof of stake as a concept, like, wasn't really, like, hardened yet. I mean, you had, like, some work from Tendermint, I think, on their approach, right? But it wasn't, like, clear that that was going to become the industry standard. And so, you know, why not have a vote, right? Freezing TRX is actually an interesting thing because you can freeze it to vote, or you can freeze it to get a couple of resources. I feel like it's a video game. You can either get bandwidth points, BP, or you can get, what do they call it? Energy.
Wow.
And so this is where it gets like super, super interesting. So on Tron, standard transactions that like don't involve a smart contract, so sending TRX, as well as sending, I want to say it's TRC10s, which is like the basic representation of tokens on Tron. So there is a representation of tokens sort of built into the protocol called TRC10, right? They also have TRC20s, which are like closer to, you know, Ethereum, like smart contract, token smart contracts. But the difference is that 10s only cost bandwidth points to send, whereas 20s cost bandwidth points and energy. Because theoretically they can contain more complex logic. So think about ERC20s that have rebasing or like whitelists or allow lists or whatever, like doing a transfer or, you know, a mint or a burn of any given ERC20 might actually call different code from any other ERC20. So you have to account for like the total energy that's consumed on the network by like stepping through this additional logic. So TRC20s are just like smart contracts, right? TRC10s are built into the protocol. They're enshrined. And so you can allow for energy-free, energy is kind of like gas. You can allow for energy-free transfers, and each transfer only costs you bandwidth points.
The thing is, why split it up like that, bandwidth points and energy?
So the idea is it's to prevent like a DDoS attack on the network, right? So if you have like a smart contract, it can have arbitrarily complex logic, right? And so you don't know going into the contract execution how much logic it's going to call. And so this is why we have gas, right? There's like Alan Turing has this famous like thesis, which is like, I think this is Turing. It's like, you can never know going into a computer program's execution, how long or how many steps or how much execution will need to be done by the contract, unless you actually just execute it. There's no way to measure without executing a program, how complex the program is.
Okay. So there's this whole thing about like the fastest way to figure out how long a program will take to run is just to run it.
Yeah, exactly. There is no other way. So, or no more efficient way. So using that like thesis, right? That's why we have gas. That's like, for example, on Ethereum, that's why you have gas with your transactions, because without that, there would be no way for validators to know how complex each smart contract call is going to be. And so as a result, you could have someone send a malicious transaction that recursively calls itself infinite times or something, and that would pose issues to the like network stability. So the idea is, in order to maintain network stability, you need to know that not too much execution is going to get done, or else, like, you know, like an infinite looping program would halt all the validators as they tried to like update their state machines, update their ledgers according to the execution of the contract. They would just go in an infinite loop. So that's why we have gas, where every operation that's done depletes the gas that's sent with the transaction by a little bit, right? And this way, at the very least, like, you can only execute for as long as the gas budget allows you to. And one of the key things is, when you pay for gas, even if your transaction fails, you still pay for all of the gas consumed up until it failed. This is why you have to pay for gas on failed Uniswap swaps or whatever, right? Because the logic that's being done to, like, it's still being done, right? Just because the transaction doesn't succeed doesn't mean that every node in the network isn't running all of the operations, right? And so you have to charge for failed transactions too. So anyway, this is all to say, for smart contracts, that's how it works. For tokens, if you build them into the protocol, like if you enshrine the concept of a token, then you know exactly how much logical execution it's going to take to, say, transfer the token, right? Because you're not allowed as a developer to make any more complex logic than that, right? It's a built-in part of the contract. All it's doing is adjusting balances for the token in the ledger. So for example, I have if I have a token that's whitelisted, right, and I try to send it to you, that extra bit of logic costs some compute. It has to check the whitelist, verify that your address is in it, and then send it. And so that has to be represented as a TRC20 or a smart contract, right? Whereas if there's just a token and all it does is keep track of like max supply, circulating supply balances, then sending that, I know exactly how much compute it's going to take to do the sending of it. All it does is updates two numbers, my balance and your balance, right? And so you know how many computational steps there are. It's like locked in, right? Versus with an ERC20, there could be all sorts of things. There could be a transfer tax. There could be a whitelist. There could be both, right? And you never know going in how much it's going to take. So you have to, like, you're forced, if you add extra like customizability, you're forced to also charge gas on that. In this case, energy.
I see. Huh.
Whereas bandwidth points, they're named that because they represent just the amount of bandwidth, just the amount of data that has to be transferred among the nodes in the network. And so you still have to charge for bandwidth, but you can charge in a different, you know, format, right? Every account on Tron gets 5,000 free bandwidth points every day. And if you lock...
airdropped almost?
Yeah, it's like it's checked against like a database of like how many points have you used today. So part of the state of the ledger is how many bandwidth points have been used today, and then they get reset every 24 hours, right? And so as part of the transfer, basically it goes through this logic of like, do you still have free bandwidth points? Then do you have any extra bandwidth points that you've acquired in one of several ways? So for example, if you freeze Tron, you get bandwidth points in return. So if you freeze TRX, and I guess freeze is for a 24-hour period, you just have some balance, you freeze it so you can't use it, that will airdrop you more bandwidth points for that day. Or you can buy bandwidth points, right? Which is kind of weird. Or you can use your Tron balance the same way you use Ether as a gas token. TRX is also a bandwidth token. So it checks, like, the system, when you send a transaction that doesn't require energy and it only requires bandwidth points, it checks those four places to see how many bandwidth points you have remaining, and then it'll just use whichever one comes first. So this basically means that if you stake some, or not stake, if you freeze some minimum amount of TRX, your transactions are free.
Interesting. Huh.
Yeah. So
I like the system overall. Like, it seems like it's well thought out and seems pretty smart. It's a little more complicated, but it seems like for a lot of, you know, specific types of transfers or, you know, specific kind of transactions, like, it seems like it would be pretty efficient.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's interesting, right? Because you can also, if you freeze TRX, it's not just limited to bandwidth points. You can also get energy, right? And so this is kind of an interesting concept of, like, when you call any smart contract, you have to use bandwidth points and energy, right? But if you freeze enough TRX, you get free not only like TRX transfers and TRC10 transfers, but free TRC20 transfers and free like any kind of smart contract call, right? And those just get like replenished. And so it's almost like a shadow form of staking yield where like I freeze my asset for some period of time and I'm rewarded for it, not in any like yield, but instead in access to the shared computational resource.
And the freezing, is that like, is there a specific time period for it, or how does the freezing?
I tried to look into it. I think you can freeze for 24 hours. I would imagine most wallets have just like a thing that will auto freeze for you. And I think there's like freezing and unfreezing as well. So maybe actually, I think freezing just takes like one call, and then I think it remains frozen. And then when you want to unfreeze, from that point, it takes until the next 24-hour period to unfreeze for you, to make it available for use. And so. Like conceptually, it's really interesting, right? Because it's like, it has baked into it this notion of a time value of Tron, right? And it's like a time value of money, right? Where money today is worth more than money tomorrow because you have some risk-free rate, call it the staking yield, right? But you could also choose to forego that staking yield and freeze your Tron or your TRX, right? And in turn, that gives you access to bandwidth points and energy, which you can use to perform computation on the network. Whereas like with Ether, it's not as direct, right? Like with Ether, in order to get ETH to pay your gas fees, you have to stake it and then unstake it, right? Whereas with Tron, you can just say, look, I'm willing to forego the staking rate and receive this other thing by default instead. With Ether, like if you're holding ETH and it's not staked, like that's it, right? Like you don't get anything in return. You don't get any points to use toward gas fees or whatever. So I think it's an interesting way of like examining the resources, right? Like it's an interesting lens.
Yeah, it also, it's very, yeah, I think it's like also just so different from ETH and so different from most of the gas tokens and just like networks we're used to that. And honestly speaking, I have not used Tron in years. Or actually, no, I did receive some USDT in Tron earlier this year. But yeah, I just would have not thought about this system ever if we weren't doing this deep dive. And it just kind of goes to show you like how open the landscape is of what you can really kind of do in terms of like token design and experimentation on that side. So
yeah, we don't see much of this anymore.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So that all makes sense. We hit on TRC10 and TRC20. Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, let's talk about Tron Solidity.
Yeah. What exactly is this? Is this just like their version or like their programming language that they, that you have to write in, to, or like write smart contracts in, or like, what is the, What is the deal there?
Yeah, it's basically exactly the same as Solidity, except it introduces two tokens, TRX in place of ETH, and SUN, which is the smallest unit of Tron is called a SUN. So in Ethereum, it's Wei, in Solana, it's Lamports, and those are both named after cryptographers. In Tron, it's SUN, named after Justin Sun.
Also, just while we're on this topic, I think the biggest DEX is called Just Swap.
I thought it was just called Sun.
Oh, is it? I thought it was called Just
Swap. Yeah, no. If you go to DeFi Llama, let's take a look at the state of Tron. Let's go to DeFi Llama.
SunSwap.
SunSwap. Yeah.
But I think SunSwap is the one I was thinking of that's bigger.
Do you know what the biggest borrow-lend protocol is?
Just Lend.
Yes, Just Lend.
Yeah, okay. I got them mixed up. Yeah, it's Just Lend and SunSwap. this guy is a branding genius.
Do you know what the maker fork is called?
Damn, no, I'm at a loss.
Just Stables.
No fucking way, dude.
Pretty wild, yeah.
What a legend.
I mean, okay, but like here's the thing though. There's a fair amount of TVL in these things. Just Lend has a TVL of 5.2 billion.
Yeah, so, there's a lot of money in these things.
So let's compare that to Aave real quick. So 5.2 billion in Just Lend. Aave in aggregate across all chains is 5.4 billion.
Wow. That is wild, actually.
So Just Lend has more TVL on it than any individual chain on. So Ethereum Aave has 4.7 bill. versus 5.2 on Just Lend.
The name is Aave on every single chain combined.
Yes.
Base just one.
I mean, these are big numbers, right? So look, like in terms of total TVL, Tron has numbers. Yeah,
it's pretty interesting to look at the breakdown. Yeah, go ahead.
So in aggregate, Ethereum has 22 billion of TVL today.
What does that mean exactly? Can we like examine exactly what that means? Is that's not like including just like ether that people are just holding, right? That's not including ether that's like sitting in exchanges or like on somebody's ledger. Is that including ether that's like put into Lido? Or is that including yes. that's been staked in general?
So Lido counts. So DeFi Llama has some weird like things. For example, real world assets don't count. Liquid staking also does not count. And a lot of this is to prevent like double counting, right? What it does count is basically assets that are locked into some kind of DeFi protocol. So that could be borrow lend, that could be, you know, AMM swaps, it could be yield farming, like in some capacity. So like if you have like sushi and it's staked in and it's earning sushi and it's in the form of X sushi, it might count that, but it might, you know, might remove it for double counting. So it's a little bit weird what they tend to do, but the DeFi Llama team is like super principles driven. So generally when they exclude something, it's like for a good reason, actually. And I've been pretty impressed with the team there. Just like dealing with them like day to day from like for Polygon stuff. It basically counts assets that are locked into DeFi in some way. So Curve, Uniswap, Aave, Balancer, Compound, you know, Sushi, like all of those things. It doesn't count assets that are just sitting there in balances. So it doesn't count Ether, that's, you know, I think it doesn't count Ether that's staked or unstaked. It only counts Ether if it's being used in a DeFi protocol, right? So like wrapped Ether that's being used in a DeFi protocol.
And it's counting basically any asset that's wrapped in any DeFi protocol, essentially.
Yeah. So this is where locked comes from. Totally locked.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Stables, Ether, Aave, Uni, whatever tokens, right? And it doesn't count stables that are just sitting there.
Makes sense.
So that actually becomes important, because if you look at TVL for Ether or for Ethereum today, it's at 22 bill. But if you look at the circulating stablecoin market cap, it's at 65 bill. So there's a lot of stablecoins that are actually just sitting there. This is the equivalent of cash under the mattress, right? Mm-hmm. It's like people don't even want to put it into Aave, right? Like that's how much that's how much stablecoins are just kind of sitting there.
So, interesting.
Yeah. So let's compare some numbers real quick. So 22 bill of TVL on Ethereum, 7 bill on Tron. So Tron is actually, it's the second biggest chain in terms of TVL right behind Ethereum. And it's amazing. If you look at the pie chart, it's like everything else is invisible after that.
So I assumed that number two is going to be BNB, but I guess BNB is also not really, it doesn't really register on the TVL pie chart.
Okay, so if we look at TVL, yeah, it's tiny, man. So number one is Ethereum at 22 billion. Number two is Tron at 7.3 billion. Number three is BSC at 2.8 billion. So
wow. Yeah.
2.8 versus 7 on Tron. And then it's like 1.8 on Arbitrum, 750 mil on Polygon, pretty steep drop from there. Pulse chain. So that, like, it really underscores just how successful this fucking thing is, right? Or like how notable, at least. I don't know if we can call it successful necessarily, and we'll dive into kind of what's going on there in a minute. But yeah. I also want to talk about the stable coin supply.
This is what I was going to say. So we talked about DeFi, and then you brought up this point about just cash sitting under the mattress, a bunch of stablecoin supply just sitting there. So what is the stablecoin supply on Tron that is just sitting there?
So it's not necessarily just sitting there. This includes stables that are also in DeFi protocols, but the total stable supply on Tron is 45 billion.
Wow. Okay, so DeFi in total is 7 billion-ish, and stables in total, including those in DeFi, are 45 billion. So yeah, what is going on here? Why are people just parking their money in USDT on Tron?
So first, I guess for reference, okay, so remember TVL, Ethereum is at 22 and Tron's at 7. So it's like 33% roughly, right? But on stables, Ethereum's at 65 versus Tron's at 45. Right, much closer to Ethereum there, and it's basically all USDT. So this is pretty interesting. There's a lot of, obviously, like a lot of FUD and a lot of rumors, and you know, nobody's really sure exactly what's going on there. There's rumors around Binance being involved. There's rumors around Huobi being involved. There's like wash trading rumors and all sorts of shit. And Justin was actually charged by the SEC with market manipulation. I don't know if you know this, like earlier this year.
On the TRX token?
Yeah, for like wash trading and stuff.
Yeah. So what is your theory, whether it be real theory, conspiracy theory, what have you? Like, why do you think this is the case? Why is USDT on Tron like almost equivalent to that on ETH? and just way, way larger than on any other network.
I mean, it's actually bigger. It's bigger than on ETH. So it's just USDT is 45 billion, or sorry, 42 of, so 42 of the 45 in stables on Tron, 42 of those are USDT. Okay. On Ethereum, 65 billion total, 35 bill are USDT. Uh-oh. So there's more Tron on, sorry, there's more Tether on Tron than there is on Ethereum. By okay. like pretty wide margin, 42 versus 35 bill. I mean, these numbers are just fucking massive. I mean, to put it in context, like USDC circulating supply was at like 50 bill at the start of the year in on all chains, and now it's shrunk by almost half. It's at like 26 or something. So it's like it's pretty insane just how big this is. One theory, and I've seen this one in action, as have you, is that people are using Tron to send USDT to each other. It's a form of savings. It's a form of payment network. And like, especially in like emerging markets where like you can't rely on your local currency, or you don't want to hold value in your local currency, or you have to do a lot of cross-border payments, USDT on Tron is like the go-to. And part of that is because you get a free amount of gas every day, right? You get a free amount of bandwidth points. You get a free amount of energy.
Yeah, you can't understate that. That's actually such a smart move.
Yeah. And like, you know, it locks up the Tron supply. So it freezes the supply in aggregate, which prevents dumping, is kind of like the tokenomic design. And it seems like it works pretty well. Right. I mean, even look, the thing is, even if you don't have the free energy or bandwidth, like the cost to send a token on Tron is like vanishingly small. It's like Solana prices or maybe cheaper. So it kind of it becomes like a pretty attractive place to operate like a payments network. Right. But it's also been around for a while. And so payment networks, they take time to establish. Right. Like if you send me USDT on some chain I've never heard of, like, I don't know if I want to trust it or not, but Tron's been around for so long that people have sort of like gained a comfort that they'll be able to redeem that for whatever else they want, or that at least the next person in line will accept it as payment.
Yeah. And then let's actually talk about the kind of final piece of all this. In the end, the reason people are accepting this is because the next person will accept that USDT for whatever shitcoin or for whatever like wrap token that they can then bridge over to ETH or to wherever, or to send to a centralized exchange and then swap it for whatever they actually want. So how does Tether kind of deal with redemptions as it relates to both like Tron network and just every other network as well? Like, is it basically just like if they support the network, you can redeem one-to-one if you're a holder of USDT, or how does that kind of like redemption piece actually work?
I mean, you have to be like an authorized redeemer, and that might be like you have to know them, or it might be like you need a minimum balance in order to get the fiat. Or it might be both, right? Like Tether is notoriously opaque, and the opacity here is very real, right? Really what you're doing is you're trusting that this thing is worth about a dollar, and that the next person in line is going to give you some kind of good or service or token in exchange for it. And a lot of times it is off-chain like real usage. So like I might go to my local coffee shop and buy a cup of coffee and pay using USDT on Tron, right? Or I might be traveling and I want to get some foreign currency, and in order to acquire it, I'm gonna use USDT on Tron as like my, you know, I'll send them some USDT and they'll give me some pesos or whatever. So it is like it's like real world usage, right? Like for most people, the path is not to like take your Tron and redeem it through Tether, take your Tether and redeem it through Tether to your bank account in the form of like a fiat wire transfer. It's like to keep that value in the digital economy.
Yeah, for sure. And like that's where the redemption actually, like that's like basically why I asked the question. It's like in the end, you probably don't want USDT on Tron. You probably want to use that as a payment rail to either get the goods or services that you want, or to trade it for the shitcoin that you actually want, or like bridge it over, bridge that same asset over to the network that you want, what have you. You just use that as the payment rail because it is so kind of convenient and cheap.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think you have people that are using it as a store of value too, right? Like there are some people that do actually want USDT on Tron, because it's just like the preferred currency among them and the people that they live with or live near, right?
Do you know where like adoption is the highest of like USDT on Tron, is savings or like, you know, something like that?
I don't know. I mean, I think globally, I've, you know, seen or met people who've used it across the world, right? Like there's definitely a bunch of usage in like Asia. I think especially in like Southeast Asia, as well as Hong Kong. I'm sure there, I mean, every once in a while we hear some stuff around like Tron USDT being used in the BOC market in China. Like there's a lot of usage, I think, in more of the authoritarian countries where like inflation is super high. So like in Argentina, in Turkey, like where people really don't want to hold the local currency, USDT on Tron is fantastic. Right. It's like providing like a basic need for people, which is a stable currency. Yeah. So I think it does tend to be, it's definitely ex-US, right? Which is why like in the US, we haven't really heard about it. But here's the most interesting thing to me. USDT on Tron is at an all-time high right now.
Mm-hmm.
Like what?
I mean, I think it's interesting, right? Like it's showing, I think, a couple things. Like one is that just across the board, like people are trusting their financial institutions less and less. And across the board, they're trusting their local currencies less and less. So even if they don't trust ETH, which is, what is the meme? Fuck. Hyper sound money, ultra hyper giga sound money. or Bitcoin, they can still just hold dollars, which are generally going up against every other sovereign currency out there. So yeah, I mean, it is a great use case for a lot of people out there.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that even with all of the opacity, even with all of the like Tether FUD, and even with like a relatively centralized chain, like, it's still a lot of people's best option.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. It's like, it's kind of like what Solana wants to be, but they've been doing it since like 2017, right?
Yeah, maybe it's Lindy. Should we talk about Tron NFTs? Or?
Oh, God, no. What is the Tron market cap?
Let me check.
Look at it. 8 billion. Is that right? Wow.
Yeah.
Dude, what? So Tron is valued under than Solana.
Yes. I think it has been for a while now.
BNB. Interesting.
Yeah. BNB is always going to
BNB
be
is the third. Solana, interesting, dude. Solana is just like almost is 14 billion almost. Tron is only 8.
Yeah.
Baby.
I mean, the next smallest one is Ton coin, which is the Telegram coin, right?
Yeah. How is that thing still at 7 bill?
Hmm? Ton coin?
Yeah.
It's been doing super well. I mean, we don't have access to it in the US, so it's been kind of off my radar. I want to say it's hyperinflationary. It's ultra unsound. I don't know.
Cardano's going ham. Doge is going ham. Solana's going ham. Interesting. What a time. The bull market's back.
Yeah, feels good.
Yeah. Okay, nice. Matt, you got anything else?
I mean, we should talk about NFTs, right?
Fine. Sure. Yeah. I mean, I honestly know nothing about Tron NFTs.
Oh man, I was hoping you would. I've no idea. it feels like it's mostly a payment network. It's got like I really think that like it's found product market fit for payments.
100%.
It's interesting because like you talk to a lot of people in like the especially in the VC space, and they're always lamenting how like payments are like the optimal use case for crypto, and like nobody's managed to like, you know, really see like traction there. But like USDT on Tron is the traction. It just doesn't need another app really.
Yeah, it is crazy. I honestly think like sometimes I really think about this seriously where it's like we might just be chasing like random kind of incremental improvements in this industry, but like we might have really found product market fit like 5 or 6 years ago. And now it's just about the work of like slowly distributing it over the next decades. But it's like, yeah, people are just using their own wallets, exchanging stable coins, buying whatever kind of stuff they want, making their lives a little bit easier. Like, and then the end result of all of that is that because they're now red pilled onto owning wallets, they start getting into ETH and Bitcoin, and you know, we then end the Fed. You know, that's kind of the whole. That's the end game here.
USDT on Tron leads to the unraveling of the dollar.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Okay. Nice. Fun.
Yeah. Interesting network. This freezing situation is like super interesting. The gas model is like way more differentiated than I realized. Bullish USDT on Tron.
Bullish USDT on Tron. Let's go. All right, cool. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. This has been another deep dive from the Decent Crypto Podcast. We'll be back later in the week or maybe early next week with our next deep dive, another recap, and we have another guest next week. So tune in, subscribe to our newsletter, join our Telegram. It's all there. See you next week. And until next time, stay decent.